Hot. Bring the heat.
And now, your host, Pat Rulo.
Recently, I interviewed an author for my Speak Up Talk Radio author series that you could find at the website speakuptalkradio.com. And I simply have to share him and his book with you today. He is Mario Kiefer, and his book is titled The Ordinary Life. So right now, I'd like to share this conversation I had with the author Mario Kiefer. So here we go. Welcome to the Speak Up Talk Radio Network. I am your hostess, Pat Rulo. We bring you hand-selected hosts, podcasts, and talk radio programming with listening options, 24/7 streaming or listen on demand. We also feature one-on-one segments with important guests, people who have something to say that you need to hear. And if you have something to say and would like to be featured on the network, please visit speakuptalkradio.com for all of the details or contact us at pr@speakuptalkradio.com. Well, I love doing these author interviews because I meet the most fascinating people who constantly inspire me. And today is no exception. I am happy to share the air with Mario Kiefer. Mario has a keen interest in people, and he likes to write about the things that make people tick, those hidden motivations they often do not see themselves. Although born in Austin, Texas, he has lived in many parts of the country and is fascinated by the differing cultural viewpoints he has encountered, always asking himself why. And he is here today to share his book, The Ordinary Life. So welcome to the network, Mario.
Thank you. I'm glad to be on.
I'm glad to have you as well. And you know, I also like to ask the question why, not only of myself, but of others. So here we go today. The tagline on your website reads, Lego ergo sum, scribo ergo sum. So why those Latin words?
Well, there's sort of a play on the Latin phrase cogito ergo sum, which is I think, therefore I am. In my version, it's I read, therefore I am. I write, therefore I am. Sort of an homage to my wanting to read and to write.
There you go. I get it. Well, now, before we get into your book, maybe just give us a little bit of background about you and what your interests are, what you've been doing prior to writing.
Well, I was born in Austin, Texas, but have lived in many parts of the country, including Philadelphia, San Francisco, Michigan, Louisiana, New Orleans, and various areas. I enjoyed traveling when I was younger, probably more in part searching for who I was. I've worked for many years as a paralegal with a law firm, probably 25 years doing that. And have always enjoyed writing and finally decided to put pen to paper and start putting out some books.
Mm-hmm. Now, was there an aha moment where you said, okay, this means I have to write, or did that just kind of happen organically?
I would say it happened organically. I started when I was very young, keeping a journal. I think probably most writers start off doing something like that. And from that point on, I just found myself writing about various topics that I saw in the news or elsewhere, and that just interested me. And it was always more the social issues than anything else. And I questioned why people felt or thought the way they felt about different things. And that led me to explore that and then write about it.
Mm-hmm. So your book titled The Ordinary Life, why did you decide to write that?
It is semi-autobiographical, about my family. And it was an interesting story. It probably started out with friends asking me why I felt the way I felt about certain things. And that led me down the path of thinking, well, you know, sometimes I just don't know. Mm-hmm. And so I started looking into my own family history and my own family's past, where we came from, and the events and things that influenced us and myself. And that led me to write the book.
Mm-hmm. Now, that was recently published in November of 2017, right?
Yes, ma'am.
Yeah, so that's newly published. Well, maybe just give us a little sneak peek just to tease our listeners.
It follows three main characters, starting off with the history of the family coming from, with the patriarch coming from Italy, running from the mafia, basically, at the time. But that is sort of a minor to the story. It then follows the story from he marries a woman in that he meets in Mexico while he's fighting with Pancho Villa, brings her back to Texas, and they raise a family. Part of the family then dynamic is that their child has a woman named Lucia, and it follows the first character is Lucia in the book. It follows her story from her early years until just before her passing, and explores all the issues that she had faced as a child as a migrant worker in the Texas fields of Hispanic descent, and some of the abuse and other issues that she faced growing up and as an adult. It then goes into the story of two of her children, each exploring their perspectives on the various events that occurred while they were young and how those events influenced them and their thinking and thoughts.
Well, now, being that it was somewhat autobiographical, was that easy for you to do, or was it a little more difficult?
A little bit of both. In many ways, it was cathartic. Mm-hmm. Some of the seminal events were actual true events, while others were, you know, I took literary license with. Those events that were actual events, it was cathartic to put that to paper. The events that were more licensed, again, as I said, literary license, were probably more interesting to write in that it gave me a way to try and delve into the mind of the character and what was that character thinking. It was difficult at times in trying to come up with what that character may have been thinking and how they were feeling, but through talking with other people and trying to put that into perspective, I think that helped. I also very much enjoyed the historical research that I did as it related to the times where the one of the characters was in the army fighting against Pancho Villa, and the historical aspects of that, as well as just other historical aspects that occurred throughout the time.
And you mentioned a couple times the word cathartic, and I think for writers, so much of our writing is very cathartic. I think it gives you a way and a reason to look inward and delve inside and ask those questions, why? Often we ask why of other people, but it's pretty difficult to look inside and ask why.
I agree wholeheartedly. Mm-hmm. It is more difficult, I think, to explore our own motivations. And I believe that, you know, many people are motivated by things that they don't even see or understand. What I like to call the hidden hand that moves us. Things that occur in our life or with the characters and people around us that we don't necessarily see, but that do have an influence on how we react or respond to various stimuli.
Mm-hmm. Writing is a little like self-therapy, don't you think?
Oh, definitely. Mm-hmm. Definitely.
Yeah. I always encourage people to write, whether you want to be a writer or not, just for your own mental health. Just writing sometimes gets it out of you and on paper, and it just changes your perspective.
I agree wholeheartedly, and I also find sometimes that when exploring a social or political issue, for example, and you start writing down whatever it is your thoughts are about that issue, sometimes you can come to a different conclusion than you thought you had.
You know, you're really hitting on a huge topic right there. I'm just fresh in my mind of seeing the conversations that I'm finding on Facebook about the shootings, the school shootings, and how people just spit out rhetoric. Yes, gun control, no gun control. Yes, mental health, no mental health. And I think many of these people have not even explored any of that. They just take those words, hang their hat on that, and don't really look at what it might really mean to them and get that full understanding of it.
I also find, I mean, as you mentioned, Facebook social posts on Facebook or others, why is that often people just repeat the headlines. Mm-hmm. They don't even read the articles that they're referring to. So they don't get an in-depth understanding of the issue. And instead they go to the knee-jerk reaction of pro or con of whatever the issue may be, and don't delve any deeper into it. Without delving deeper into it, they don't have an understanding of the issue, and I don't think that they can really make a fully formed judgment without having that more thorough understanding.
Absolutely. We are on the same page with that. It's very frustrating, actually, as a person who does ask the question why all of the time, to read through those and think, oh my, what people are seriously missing here. So I guess that's a conversation for another time, yeah?
Yeah, yes, ma'am.
So, Mario, why the title, The Ordinary Life?
Well, to the characters in the book, their life was ordinary. This is what happened. And they didn't think anything different. They didn't know any different. There's a line in the book where Lucia is thinking about the poverty that she grew up in, not understanding that she was actually poor. She didn't understand she was poor until somebody told her. To her, that was just ordinary. And I believe that to every man, their life is ordinary. It's only until they get a perspective from outside where they see that maybe it wasn't as ordinary as they thought. And so that's where the title comes from.
And that's huge. That's a huge comment. Is that the primary theme then through the book, would you say?
Yes. The events that occurred were just accepted as, you know, ordinary events. This is what happens in everybody's life without understanding that maybe that's not truly the case until they explore and learn and meet new people and come to an understanding that maybe some of this wasn't so ordinary.
And especially in ethnic type families, as you're saying, from the heritage from Italy and the heritage from Mexico, those family stories just keep getting passed and passed from one generation to the other. And that kind of becomes everybody's reality.
Exactly. Whether it's real or not, The stories that we tell ourselves, we repeat so often that we may not even recognize when they're incorrect.
You know what? This is kind of crazy for me to think this. It just reminds me of a crazy story about this generations of women in this family that every time they baked a ham for, I don't know if it was Easter or Christmas, whatever, every time they baked the ham, they cut the ends off of the ham, extreme pieces of the sides. They just cut them off before they would bake them. And finally, somebody asked the question, why do you do that? And they said, well, my great-grandmother always did that, and then my grandmother did it, my mother did it, now I do it. Well, when they went back and redid some research, they found out the reason why the great-grandmother did that is because the ham did not fit in the pan that she had.
That's an exact story in the book, only it was a pot roast as opposed to a ham.
Okay, there you go, right?
There you go.
Yep, yep. Now, after I heard that story, I begin to question everything I do and think, oh my gosh, my mom did it that way. I wonder why. So I think that theme of your book is extremely important for people to take note.
Well, often we repeat the same patterns and we do the same things without understanding why we're doing them.
Mm-hmm.
And if you explore the why, sometimes you come to the conclusion that maybe that's not the best reason to be doing whatever it is that you're doing.
Right.
Once you understand the why, I think you can make a choice on perhaps a better path.
Now, you mentioned there's three lenses in this story. So you've got the same story, but looking at the situation from three different eyes. How was that to write?
The story of Lucia was not too difficult to write, as that was based primarily on stories that I had heard from my mother and my family. Trying to get into the mind of the character and how they were feeling at the time was perhaps a little difficult, but it was more of an attempt to put myself in the shoes and how I would feel if I were in those shoes at that time. The second story of Julian was perhaps a bit more difficult for me to write, as that character was based on an individual that the other characters did not necessarily get along with, so it was important for me to make that character sympathetic. And it was difficult at times. I had to definitely set aside my own biases in order to try and understand the thought, inner workings and thoughts of that character, and thereby make the character sympathetic to the reader.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's probably true of the third character, Mateo, in the book as well, in that there are definitely mistakes that the character has made, and you can see those mistakes glaring and the things that he did. But you want to make sure that the reader is engrossed and understands the character to a point where they can have some sympathy. And if not sympathy, at least an understanding about the choices that are made and why those choices are made, even if they don't agree with the choice.
Well, it must have been very interesting for you to write this for yourself.
It was.
Mm-hmm.
It definitely was. Mm-hmm. And it was trying to get into the minds of the different characters was perhaps the most interesting aspect of it all.
Because this is a bit of a memoir, family members, what was the reaction when they read the book?
It varied from a family member to family member. Some were saying, I don't remember it that way. And of course, my response as well, you know, it's from different perspectives, as well as, you know, I took literary license with some of the events as was necessary in order to make the story flow.
Right, right. Interesting. Now, The Ordinary Life of Luciana is coming out. Is it coming out soon?
I'm hoping that it'll be out this fall. I'm still working on it. This takes one of the characters from The Ordinary Life, and my hope is that I'll have it done this fall, and it's going to delve into her thoughts and ideas and run along her life story thereafter.
And Luciana is the younger sister of Lucia?
Yes, ma'am. It was a family of 12, mostly girls, as far as the siblings were concerned. And Luciana was a younger sister to Lucia. As is often the case in some ethnic families, yeah, the names can be very similar. In reality, my family's my aunts were all named Maria something. So my mother, whose name was Maria Jesus, and then we had each girl was named Maria Gloria, Maria Brigida, Maria whatever. Mm-hmm. So they were all named Maria, and all went by the middle name.
Okay. I love that, actually. So that's in the process. Is there going to be a book three, do you think?
Yes, there's another character in the book, one of the boys, that I think I want to take and follow his life thereafter. Once I've finished with Luciana's story, and then I will take the boy's story and follow his life and go from there. And then I have probably six or seven other projects in mind that have nothing to do with this Ordinary Life series.
Oh, really? Can you give us a peek into that?
Well, recently I've been, one of my favorite stories, the story of the trial of Christ before Pontius Pilate. And I think it would be a very interesting tale to take it from Pontius Pilate's point of view as a government official who's being pressured into a judgment of someone before them. Whether it's a retelling in Roman times or a retelling in modern day time of how the mob rule, if you will, can pressure officials into doing things that they may not otherwise want to do.
Very relevant in today's times as well.
I thought so. I mean, when I every time I read the story of Pontius Pilate or I see something about it, I think to myself, that was 2,000 years ago and some 5,000 miles away. Mm-hmm. Yet it could still be occurring here today, exactly where we are.
Absolutely. Nothing much has changed.
In that intervening 2,000 years, nothing has changed.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I don't think enough people are asking why.
Well, there's a quote that I like to say all the time, and that quote is, you know, nothing changes but the names and the places. Mm-hmm. It's the same events repeated over and over again for whatever reason. Maybe that's the human condition. And the only thing that seems to change is, you know, the names and the places. I recall in 1986, I wrote a poem that I called Another Day. In that poem, I was discussing social and political issues that were occurring in 1986. In 2016, 30 years later, I dusted off that poem and I read it. And with the mere exception of changing a few things here and there, it was still applicable. Mm-hmm.
I had a friend who used to say, same string, different banjo.
Exactly.
Yep, yep. That's quite sad, actually.
Yes, it is. It is. We can't seem, and perhaps it's the human condition, but we can't seem to break the pattern.
Mm-hmm. Well, and see, and that's the beauty of history. You would think that one could look back and say, all right, this is what led to that downfall. What can we do differently?
I agree wholeheartedly with that. But I wonder at times if we don't do that, and you can see it today, we destroy history, and we forget history, and we do so because we think it's the right thing to do often. But when we do so, we're forgetting what we've learned. The Taliban is a perfect example of a group of people who decided to destroy history when they destroyed statues of ancient gods. Mm-hmm. In Afghanistan. ISIS destroyed statues of Roman gods in Iraq and Syria. And they do this without even understanding that what they're doing is destroying a history from which we learn. Mm-hmm. And they're doing it, it's understandable that they're trying to fit society into its current social mores and ethos. But without understanding the past social mores and ethos, how are you going to understand where you are today?
And sadly, though, Mario, we saw that a few months ago, Columbus Day, and people are trying to tear down the statues of Columbus. Well, whether you believe or you like or whatever, as you say, that's destroying history.
Well, exactly. And I took a trip last summer to Romania, and we were in Romania for about a week, and we traveled and saw various sites. And almost to a man, each tour guide that we had when we toured these different areas would tell us, we think, but we don't know for sure about whatever it is. We think this happened, but we don't know for sure. And when I asked, why don't you know for sure? I said, well, the communists destroyed this because it didn't fit the narrative. After the communists fall, people destroyed some of the communist stuff because it didn't fit the narrative. So we think, but we don't know. And I wonder, in 100 years from now, whether we here in America will say to a tourist, we think, but we don't know.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. We talked about a knee-jerk reaction. It just seems like we've got a lot of that going on.
And too much knee-jerk reaction, not enough thought given into, you know, what it truly means in the bigger picture of things.
Yep,
you can't erase the past without erasing the future.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I love this conversation with you. Thank you. I'm thinking we're hitting on some very interesting topics that hopefully will leave our listeners thinking. So as far as you've written your first book and now you're into the second book, what have you learned about yourself as a writer, as a person?
Oh, that's a good question. I learned that I need to be far more disciplined, but that there's a lot of things that as you explore those different things, you come up with a different perspective. And what I have learned about myself is that I try to be even-handed and even-minded, even if I have one perspective on something. In my writing, I try to present both sides of an argument or multiple sides of an argument where there are more than two, and try and come up with a conclusion that makes sense. And there are times when I'll change my opinion based upon that. So what I've learned about myself is that I need to definitely be open-minded to those other things, and I try to believe that I am.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm human. I'm a human being, as everyone else is, and sometimes that can be difficult.
Well, just being able to verbalize that you're working toward that, I think, is a huge step in the right direction. So then, as you're writing, obviously, it's helping you a great deal, and you're retracing your past as well. But what is your hope for your readers? What is your goal for them to take away?
I think that in anything I write, my goal or hope for my readers is that when they read it, first off, they enjoy the story. But secondly, that, you know, they think about the issue, whatever the issue is, that the characters are facing. And they think about the events that are occurring and how the characters are reacting. Each of us will read how a character reacts to something in any book that we read, and we'll say, well, I wouldn't do that. But I hope that they can take the context of what's going on with the character in the time and at the place that it's occurring, and understand that the character is making the best choice that he or she can make at the time with the information that they have. You know, given the long lens of time and looking back on something, we can each perhaps make a different decision. But at the time, you only have the information that you have in order to make that decision. So I hope that people who read these will understand the characters and how the characters are struggling with trying to make the decision that they have to make based upon the information that they have at the time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, somehow identify with them and use that as some takeaway.
Exactly, mm-hmm. Exactly. And I think that by doing so, people would perhaps have a better understanding of those around them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, my perspective comes from the events of my life. I am nothing more nor less than the sum of my past. And that is true of each of us. We're each nothing more nor less than the sum of our past. And by understanding that, I think, and understanding each other's past and the events around us, we get a better understanding of each other. And if we get a better understanding of each other, perhaps some of this knee-jerk reaction against things that we were discussing earlier could cease. And maybe we would get along better.
You are spot on, my friend. Absolutely. Glad we had this conversation. Well, let's talk a little bit about the mechanics of what you do, your writing process. Where, when, how does that come about for you?
That is varied. I will tell you, sometimes I'll wake up in the middle of the night with a thought in my head. Sometimes it comes from a dream. Sometimes I just wake up, don't know why I'm thinking whatever it is I'm thinking, and I have to get it out. I have a tendency to walk around out in my backyard talking to myself, exploring whatever it is that I was thinking, and then I take that and try and write it down. Sometimes I'll speak with friends or family members and try to talk issues that I'm thinking about through with them to get their perspectives to help me to then write whatever it is I'm writing. And then I just sit down and I write. Mm-hmm. And then I edit. And then I edit. And then I edit. And I change it repeatedly, too many times to count, in order to try and get it to say exactly what it is I wanted to say.
Mm-hmm. Now, are you a full-time writer or do you work as well?
No, ma'am. I still work full-time at my full-time job. So my writing is my writing time is limited to evenings and weekends, pretty much.
You know, I find that so frustrating as well. You've got this great idea and you want to just sit down and write, but you've got these other responsibilities. And like, nope, I've got to wait till later. And boy, that itch to get it down sometime is very compelling and difficult to cast aside.
It definitely can be. And what I'll do at those times generally is just write down notes to myself so that I remember what I was thinking. Mm-hmm. But I never seem to have the same passion as when the thought initially occurs.
Isn't that the truth? In the middle of the night, and you then try to think the same word over and over and think, all right, when I wake up, I'll remember. And like you say, you do, but it's just not as juicy as it was when you first thought of it.
Right. The passion just seems to wane a bit.
Oh my gosh, we need to get rid of all our jobs and just sit there and write, right?
Oh, that'd be wonderful.
Wouldn't that be awesome? I love it. So what about the publishing process? How did you get the book published?
Well, The Ordinary Life is self-published. Hopefully, I'll be submitting the next one to some literary agents and we'll see from there. But if need be, I'll self-publish that one as well.
Oh, thank goodness for self-publishing. There's so much amazing work out there that never would have seen the light of day 20 years ago.
I agree. You know, it's difficult when you basically have the big five, and you have to, not every book is everybody's cup of tea. So in order to get the different ideas and new ideas and new thoughts out there, or even different, same ideas but expressed differently can at times be difficult for a new writer who has no resume behind them to encourage one of the publishing houses to pick them up.
Mm-hmm. No, like I say, hats off to self-publishing. I think it's been a huge leap for writers to share their thoughts and their wisdom with other people. So,
yes, ma'am.
Yep. All right. Well, we've wandered around you and what you're working on. Is there anything that we missed that you wanted to talk about today?
Not that I can think of. I mean, other than you know, we talked about what I hope my readers get out of my writing, and definitely what I hope to get out of my writing, which is to express those thoughts and ideas and provoke thought. Mm-hmm. Beyond that, there's nothing else that I can think of.
Good. You are a thought provoker, my friend. Well, then where can folks go to learn more about you, and where can they purchase your book and your upcoming book?
The book is currently available on Amazon.com. It can also be found at BarnesandNoble.com. There are some other websites that it's available at, including my own website, MarioKiefer.com, has a link to the Amazon.com website. You can order it if you go into a bookstore like Barnes & Noble. You can find it on their kiosks and have it ordered. It's print on demand, so they'll order it for you and then have it shipped to you. So that's where you can find the book.
Okay. And the website is MarioKiefer.com, and that's M-A-R-I-O. K-I-E-F-E-R, MarioKiefer.com. I have loved this conversation today, and I knew that I would. Any final words before we say goodbye?
No, ma'am. Thank you very much for taking the time to speak with me. I enjoyed our conversation and hope to have more conversations with you in the future as the new books come out.
Oh, that would be my pleasure. Yes, when the second book comes out, let's do this again.
Sounds great. Thank you so much.
Well, there you have it. We are out of time, but certainly never out of topics. So be sure to come back next week and we will have some more goodies for you. Same time, same place, but you know me, never the same information. Until then, I hope you have a healthy and a happy week. I am Pat Rulo, and I am the voice for informed choice.